Oh, hey, it's that sweater that lives in the back seat. Allie Ward. I'm here with episode number 4 of Smologies. Smologies, if you're like, what's that? They are bite-sized, classroom-friendly edits of our original Ologies classics. So if you haven't heard the original Melittology Bees episode and you don't mind swearing and juicy, sometimes filthy details, stop what you're doing and listen to that version at the link in the show notes. But if you need a shorter, G-rated director's cut, you're in the right place. So this episode still has me buzzing around the room with excitement because it's all about bees. So Melittology, by the way, comes from the Greek for bee. So everyone you know named Melissa, their name means bee. Go tell Melissa that fun fact. So I met today's ologist in Portland, where she is a melittologist and president of the Urban Beekeepers Association there. And after we recorded in 2018, she decided to start her own amazing podcast called Beekeeper Confidential. And if that wasn't enough, she also is the founder of Bellabeek, a company that creates made-to-order bee veils. So get ready to find out all about bee bread, what colors make you most attractive to bees, who has stingers and why, why agricultural honeybee populations are threatened, but why native bees are of greater concern, how you can help them, hives versus nests, carpenter bees, blue bees, and how honeybees have a call and response song of their very own with bee expert and melittologist Amanda Mandy Shaw. What's going on with these bees?
So what we're seeing is, you know, bees are being put into nest boxes that aren't ideal.
Oh.
And if you look at the industrial beekeeping complex, bees are being forced to pollinate and work outside of their normal cycle.
Oh.
And so they're being pushed to these limits and it's weakening their immune systems. And when there's monoculture and pesticide use involved, it causes them to collapse. And I think that generally the wild honeybee population is doing okay. It's the managed hives. It's the ones that are used in agricultural practices that we're seeing the big issues with, the colony collapse.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, native bees are solitary and they don't make honey, but they do gather pollen to feed their young.
What is their normal life cycle? Do they only work in certain months and we're like, yo, we got stuff to pollinate?
Right, it's February. Yeah. We've got almond trees to pollinate. Get up, let's go.
So Portland is relatively temperate, and Amanda says that the bees do survive over winter, and then they're up and at them in late March, early April, and then by November, they start shutting down for winter again, living off the honey, and they have smaller colony numbers. But the summer bees are the most extra. They're out there.
The summer bees only last about 6 weeks because they literally work themselves to death.
Oh!
Yeah.
And most of them are women anyway, right?
Yes. They need to take a break, right?
It is, because most of the workers are all women.
The workers are all women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they work themselves to death.
To death, yes.
Good God.
Yeah.
In the scale of 0 to 10, what can the average person do?
I always tell people you don't have to be a beekeeper to help the cause.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing that bees need right now, honeybees and native bees, is food that's safe. You know, providing, you know, plant seeds that haven't been pre-treated with pesticides.
Oh.
And check the labels because a lot of them are pre-treated.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And planting plants that haven't been pretreated with systemic pesticides. That's one of the big issues.
I didn't know what a systemic pesticide was because I live in LA and my garden is a parking lot. But they're the kind of pesticides that live in the tissues of the plant instead of just being misted over the leaves.
Another thing that native pollinators are struggling with is habitat. So if you can have a corner of your yard where, you know, you can have that compost pile on the ground for bumblebees to nest in, or there's lots of other ground nesting bees. So having that awareness, you can make your yard its own little nature site.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And the bees will come.
Can you tell me a little bit about the difference between honeybees and native bees? And should we be using honeybees in this environment?
Oh, with native bees, they're actually more effective pollinators than honeybees are. But honeybees sort of get all of the attention. Mm-hmm. And they can be used in the agricultural industry. They can be used as livestock to pollinate large crops. But native bees are more effective pollinators. And we have over 4,000 species of native bees in America.
What?
So there's a lot of them out there, but they sort of don't get the attention that they need because the honeybees are, you know, the star of the show. And, and they're the ones getting, you know, the cry for help is for the honeybees. But really, it's the native bees that need the habitat. They need variety in their diet. So when you have like these giant fields of almonds or cotton or corn or soybeans, that's not good for the native bee population because they need variety.
You heard how shocked I was that there were over 4,000 species of native bees in America, and Apis mellifera, the European honeybee you're so familiar with, is not one of them. That's right. They were brought over by settlers for wax and honey and pollination, and the native bees get edged out of territories and are more threatened. And the native ones are the species who need saving. And I had to know more about these supporting but important native players in the bee show, which, let me remind you, is an ensemble piece. Have you ever seen those huge black bees buzzing around in the summer? So they're probably carpenter bees, and they drill out these perfect little tunnels in wood to raise their young. And the females are black and glossy, and they rarely sting, and the males are this great golden blonde color. They don't even have stingers, of course, because they're dudes, and a stinger is a modified egg-laying part. So only females have them. Now, these facts are helpful conversational distractions. If you ever see a carpenter bee and everyone around you is shrieking, just say, hey, this is a native bee and it's our friend. Now, another native bee friend, which you can keep and rear in your yard, mason bees. What's a mason bee?
What's a mason bee?
Mason bees are solitary bees. They're known as the gentle pollinator. They're native. They're also called blue orchard mason bees, and they nest in these little tubes. And they're super easy. It's like beekeeping for anybody. Anybody could keep mason bees. And they're fuzzy and they're shiny and blue and cute. And, you know, when they're coming back to their nest, you can see little packs of pollen on their bellies.
No.
They're bringing it back. And they're really cute.
So a non-yellow, non-striped bee? Yes, they exist. There are a lot of them. So mason bees are this really beautiful kind of gunmetal blue color. And in a lot of the 1 billion photos I just scrolled through while turning into a living, breathing, heart-eyed emoji, mason bees appeared to be covered in pollen a lot.
It's all over the place.
I guess sloppy gatherers make really good pollinators. It's just like, like confetti pollen everywhere.
And now, what do you keep?
I plant a lot of oregano, mint, lavender, and stuff that's really easy to grow, that's kind of blooms long season. Borage is a really great bee food, and it's super easy to take care of.
So maybe plant yourself a little garden or even a pot or two of flowers on a window box or a stoop. Those can be a wonderland for native bees or honeybees. Now, if you like, if that's just not enough bees, if you're like, I need 30,000 bees, maybe think about beekeeping like Amanda does. But before you go ordering a whole setup, which can set you back a few $100, you may want to check with a local beekeepers association first, because they can sometimes rent or lend equipment, which is handy, or they can tell you which hive boxes or cool face nets attached to a hat are bunk and not to buy. Personally, I say buy Amanda's. Link in the show notes. But this brings us to stings. Why do they hurt?
So bee venom contains a compound called melanin, which makes red blood cells burst, which hurts. And there are other proteins that destroy cell membranes, cause pain, destroy nerve tissue. There's also histamine in bee venom, which makes your capillaries leak and causes itchy welts. So when bees sting, they release a pheromone that says, I'm in trubs. It's a last-ditch defense. Bees don't want to sting you. They don't want to die. They would really, really rather very much not.
So you prevent getting stung by just being really, really kind of cautious about where they are at all times, like just kind of watching your back.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And now when they're swarming, tell me what is happening.
So a swarm is like a birth of a new colony.
Ooh.
And it happens in the springtime when bees are, you know, coming out of winter, the queen starts laying eggs, the colony starts like brooding up. They start ramping up their population production. Mm-hmm. And so they'll make new queens to prepare for the swarm. And so when the new queens emerge, the old queen leaves the hive with about half of the bees, mm-hmm. and they go off to find a new place to live.
Oh, that's fascinating, because I always thought that it was a new queen that was like, bye.
No.
But really, it's the old one that's
the old one, yeah.
Side note, fun fact, when a bee colony is naturally occurring, it's called a nest. But when it's in a human-made container, then it's a hive. Is that fun? So where do these old queens go after they bounce from their former colony? Well, apparently, hollows in trees are like just ideal new digs. And Amanda says hollows in trees are insulated. It's an alive ecosystem. It has a microbiome that's beneficial to them. So a great place to rear tens of thousands of babies. But how do they do that? What are they eating?
The bee goes out and gathers some nectar, and they use their tongue, their proboscis. It's like a straw. Mm-hmm. And they suck that up, and the nectar goes into their honey stomach. So it's a secondary stomach that they have.
Okay.
And they carry it in that, and when they bring it back to the hive, they do this thing called trophallaxis. And it's they're regurgitating the nectar into another bee's mouth.
Oh.
And they pass it back and forth. And each time they do this, they're adding enzymes to it. It reduces the moisture content of the nectar a little bit, because the nectar is very high in moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And so before it can become true honey, they have to bring that moisture content down quite a bit. So after they pass it back and forth, they'll put it into a little honeycomb cell,
mm-hmm.
and they fill that up, and then they use their wings to sort of flap mm-hmm. and get the air moving and reduce the moisture content. Ideally for harvested honey, 17% is the most moisture that you'd want to have for it.
Oh, okay.
And then they cover it with wax, and so it stays fresh forever, really.
What are they using the honey for? How are they using that honey to feed a brood?
They feed their brood pollen.
Okay.
Actually, so when they're collecting pollen, they're bringing that back to the hive, and they're adding enzymes to it to sort of ferment it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called bee bread.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, bee bread.
That's cute.
And so they'll feed that to their babies. And it's a protein source.
Got it. So then what's the honey used for the adults?
They eat it. Yeah. It gives them energy. It's a carbohydrate. It sustains them through the winter.
Oh, so are they collecting it more in spring and summer and then living off of it in the winter?
Yes. Yeah.
Got it.
And before a swarming event, they fill up on it. Everybody fills up before they leave the hive, because they need that energy for when they get to their new home location, mm-hmm. to build comb, because they won't have any comb where they're going unless they're moving into an old beehive.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to start from scratch.
So now that I have heard the buzz about how honeybees eat, I needed to ask about their colony's social setup. Who's overworked and bitter? Who's popular? Who's good with kids? It turns out every honeybee colony has roles that different bees inhabit, including Her Highness Queen Bee.
And there is a queen. Mm-hmm. There are the female workers, and then there are the drones, right?
Yes.
And so how do they determine who is the queen?
The queen is made a queen when she's still an egg.
Ooh.
3 days old egg. And the change happens when they start feeding her. She's only fed royal jelly, so she doesn't get any bee bread. She's deprived of protein during her development. And that is what makes her a queen.
Because she's deprived of
She's protein? Given a totally different diet. And so that somehow changes her. She grows differently than the worker bee.
And what's royal jelly exactly?
Royal jelly is this enzyme that the bees, they have these glands that they...
Oh, really?
They excrete it. Yeah.
So that comes from a bee face and not
it's
from a...
It's from a bee face.
Oh. And so do a lot of different workers like contribute to that, or is it like the one nurse?
So what happens is, if a bee lives out its full life cycle, it will achieve all of the different jobs within a colony.
Oh.
And they start out as nurse bees. So when they first are born, they come out and they start tending the young and the larvae. And then there's food processor bees. There's cleaning bees because they like to keep their hive really clean. And the last stage is the foraging bees. Those are the most experienced bees, and they go out and are the ones that we see in the gardens. And so let's say they make 5 queens and they all emerge around the same time. They will call each other out. They do this thing called piping. And so they kind of sounds like a kazoo. They'll call to each other and then they'll fight.
Side note. So the first queen out starts roaming around making this noise in G sharp. It's called piping or tooting. It's like me, me, me. Now, a few of her sisters who have also been raised to be queens but are still sleeping in their little cells, they just snoozed a little longer. They respond with a noise called quacking. It sounds like a duck honk. It's kind of like Marco Polo, but with newborns. Now, here's the thing. When the sleepy queens quack back at the first one, that first one's like, oh, there you are, and then goes and kills them.
And does she have a stinger, or does she have, because I know a stinger is an ovipositor. Yeah, we learned that, right?
She does have a stinger, but it's not barbed like a worker stinger. So she can use it in battle, but it's not like the worker stinger with the venom sac.
Also, fun fact, unlike honeybee workers who would sting and die to defend their colony, most native solitary bees are not quick to sting. So embrace your native bees, but not literally. They don't need hugs, but they do need flowers to romp around and to shower themselves in pollen.
Why are workers and drones fuzzy?
It's my understanding that the workers have fuzz because it helps them to gather the pollen. It will stick to them. They get a little bit staticky and sticky, and it will stick to their fuzz, and then they can clean it off and sort of push it into their little pollen packets.
So imagine if your breakfast cereal just stuck to your clothes and then you just kind of swiped it into a couple of cargo pants pockets. See? You're a bee. Now, on to honeybee keeping. I'm a little hazy on how smoke can calm down honeybees. Can Mandy clear the air for me?
And now, the smoke, you're essentially the smoke monster. You're like, they fall asleep? They get drowsy?
So, it confuses them. It masks their pheromones. So, if they're really feisty, you can put a little smoke on them, and it subdues their sense of smell. But it also tricks them into thinking, the hive is on fire, we got to load up on honey and get out of Dodge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How do they know where their new home is? Do they have GPS? No. But they do get directions from their sisters via, yes, interpretive dance. That's not what you thought I was going to say, right? I know, it's shocking. So it's not some dance you do at weddings or on cruise ships or on TikTok. It's actually a form of physical communication called a waggle dance. I am not making this up.
So with the waggle dance, they're communicating locations of food, water, or even a new place to live. And the orientation of the direction that they're doing the dance in correlates with where the sun is at.
Whoa.
So they're following the sun and they're using their waggle dance to tell you which direction, like if the sun is, due east, they'll do their dance due east.
Wow. And then
the intensity of the waggle tells you how good of a source it is.
I just want to say, I have been known to do a little dance at the first bite of a great sandwich. So I get it. It happens to the best of us. Now, really quick, speaking of the best of us, each week a cause gets a donation. And this week we are splitting it between the Xerxes Society and the Pollinator Partnership. And there will be links to those in the show notes. And also Mandy's about to tell you a little bit about them. And those donations are made possible by sponsors in the show, who you may hear about now. Okay, on to your questions. Lightning round. This one is about native bees.
Eric Blanc wants to know, I want to help bees in my area. What's a good resource to find out the proper wildflowers to plant for them?
I would go to the local extension department at the university. Xerxes Society has a lot of resources. Pollinator Partnership also has a lot of resources, so you can find what's growing in your area.
And John Worster and Jesse Peel both had the same question. Will eating honey that's been harvested locally help if you have seasonal allergies?
Word on the street is that it does.
So it gets your body used to maybe those pollens.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm not an allergist, but yes, it's like you're inoculating yourself with the irritant and your immune system adjusts to that rather than taking an antihistamine to just suppress any kind of response.
Katie Grant wants to know, are bees actually more attracted to bright yellow clothing? I wear a safety vest for work and was told that an orange vest won't attract bees like a yellow one does. Is this true?
In my own personal experience, when I wear my bright yellow coat,
mm-hmm.
I do have bees land on me.
Wow.
Maybe it's because you look like pollen, and I don't know.
Okay, so we have learned a lot about honeybees and their homes, but what can they do if suddenly an intruder enters the nest? Well, this is bananas.
I've read that bee species will gather in a ball and increase the local temperature in order to cook wasps and other invaders,
yes.
Like Japanese hornets. So what is that mechanism and how do they not cook themselves in the process?
It's called balling.
Boom.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
And so they will use their body heat to cook the predator.
That's hot.
And what is your favorite thing about bees?
I love this thing that they do called festooning.
What?
Yeah.
What is it?
Festooning is when they're building new comb. So mm-hmm. they have to work together to do this. And what they do is they join hands and they make this lovely little chain. And then bees gather together in the chain and they excrete the wax from their abdomen and they pass it up to the bees up top. So they are working together while in contact with each other to make this comb.
What?
And they make the chain so that it's plumb to the earth, so it's straight, so they know. And it's just, and the comb, when it's brand new, is beautiful. It's very translucent. It's so delicate and perfect.
Oh, wow.
They make it perfect.
So, wow. Okay. We learned honeybees are not native to North America. Native bees are amazing too and need our help. Pollinator plants are the best. And queens don't get to eat bee bread. Ah! Now, to learn more about Mandy Shaw, you can follow her on Instagram and Twitter. She is Being Mandy, with two E's in being, on both platforms. And to learn more about her, you can go to bellabeek.com, BellaBeek.com. She sells very stylish netted beekeeper bonnets that she makes. And for all the sweet behind the scenes on beekeeping, you can listen to her podcast. It's called Beekeeper Confidential. Those will all be linked in the show notes, as well as the credits for all the great humans who work on the podcast. The saucier non-Smologies version of Melittology is also linked in the show notes in case you do not have any kiddos around. You can find more Smologies episodes at allieward.com/Smologies. Those are all cut down, condensed versions that are G-rated for kids and cleaned up. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Ologies. I'm at Allie Ward with one L on Twitter and Instagram. If you listen to the end of the episode, you know I share some advice like a cool uncle. And this week it is, if mornings ever feel too hectic, I totally understand, try to do as much as you can to get ready the night before. Like pick out an outfit for school, maybe help make your lunch before you go to bed, pack your book bag all up, and then getting out the door will be much easier when you don't have to make a bunch of decisions and gather your stuff when you still feel too sleepy. So I hope that helps. It helps me sometimes. Okay, until next time, Smologites. Bye-bye.
Beekeeper suit.